Presentation. Our next, so as Mr. Ibaugh explained earlier, part of our marketing challenges for us as we move forward is we've got a real diversification in our consumer base, what they're expecting, what they want, and we're hoping to address that with our panel that's coming up. We have a panel discussion next that's, I guess, titled Adding Value to Our Product from the Cow-Calf Feedlot and Meat Science Perspective. So with that, we're going to have a group of panelists up here that's going to be moderated by Amanda Blair. Amanda, Dr. Blair, Blair received her PhD in meat science from Purdue University. She's currently on faculty at South Dakota State University, where her research has focused on an understanding of the effects of pre- and postnatal cattle management and how that impacts growth, body composition, and meat quality. So Amanda will be moderating our panel discussion. On our panel, we have Britton Blair. Britton ranches near Sturgis, South Dakota, which is part of the family ranching operation, and he is partner in Blair Brothers Angus Ranch. In addition to seed stock, the Blair Brothers Ranch also includes grazing stockers as well as finishing cattle. They've developed a buyback program where calves are finished and they are marketed through the U.S. Premium Beef Program. Gary Darnell is also on our panel. Gary, as well as Lee, are on Lane Darnell, our fourth and fifth generation ranchers and feedlot owners and operators of the Darnell Feedlot, along with their family. Darnell Feedlot has been a CAB partner for many years and has won many CAB Quality Focus Awards over the years. Gary and his family were recognized with the BIF Commercial Producer Award in 2013, and Gary is a member of the Nebraska Hall of Agricultural Achievement, was recognized in that, and he, I should also point out, Gary is a recipient of the Outstanding Alumni Award from the University of Wyoming. So we have the benefit of Gary working on both sides of the state line here, so we appreciate that. And then finally, Paul Dykstra is a beef cattle specialist for Certified Angus Beef, and from his home office in Chapel, Paul works closely with ranchers and feed yard managers in the central and western U.S. to help them target for the brand. He shares reports and cattle and the beef market trends through the biweekly CAB Insider, and he provides a lot of education for ranchers and many community partners in the business. So with that, I'm going to turn the microphone and the program over to Amanda. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Steve, and good morning to everyone. I'd first like to thank the Range Beef Cow Planning Committee for inviting us to and giving us this opportunity to join this panel together to speak on the topic of adding value to our product, and really to do that from a perspective of several different segments of the industry. So just a brief introduction here. I think most of you that follow the cattle markets would agree with this statement that I have up here, that marketing fed cattle has changed drastically over the last 20-plus years with the increase of formula and grid-based pricing structures. And that's really resulted in economic returns becoming more impacted by the quality of cattle than ever before. So having an understanding of the changing marketplace and changing consumer demands are more and more vital to capturing and adding value to our product. We'd probably also agree that very few producers retain ownership of cattle from birth through slaughter. And I think it's important, and this was underscored again by Undersecretary Ibaugh, that it's important for participants in all segments of the industry to understand the end product and how value can be added. So to that end, we've gathered an industry panel to speak with you about this topic of adding value to our product, representing different segments of the industry. So again, representing the meat industry is Paul Dykstra from Certified Angus Beef. Representing the feed yard sector is going to be Gary Darnell of Darnell Feed Yard. And representing the cow-calf segment is Britton Blair of Blair Brothers Angus Ranch. So I get the easy job. I'm just going to turn things over to these guys, and they're each going to share with you their perspectives. And I'm going to hand things over to Paul first to give his take as a representative of the meat industry.
Well, thanks, Amanda. And let me first say what a humbling experience it is to be invited to speak on this panel. First of all, two gentlemen here serving with me as panelists, I respect very, very much their experience and knowledge about this business to be, I do. So, to be able to share time with you two gentlemen is certainly an honor. As well, to speak to many of you, so many familiar faces that are neighbors of ours here in the region. I get to travel all over the country, but to speak in my own backyard, so to speak, just up the road from my home in Chapel, Nebraska, is a bit daunting because I know I'll have to see some of you again. That's a little bit scary. And then finally, to follow the other esteemed speakers and, frankly, Donald Brown, after hearing him last night, Breton and I shared notes that perhaps we might ought to saddle up and just ride on out of here. Not sure we want to follow that act, but there's been a night's sleep between him and me, so that's the good news. You know, a couple of our speakers a moment ago, Aaron Berger, and then also Donald yesterday afternoon talked about the pie, either dividing it and splitting it up amongst family members, or in Aaron's discussion, the fact that maybe the pie has shrunk in terms of what we can receive for our product. And I think all of that is very appropriate to what we're going to talk about today, because as cow-calf operators, I think many of you and myself included would spend quite a bit of time figuring out how to have less cost associated with making the pie. And my end of the business at Certified Angus Beef, and what we think about is how do we get a bigger pie from the consumer by providing a product that they want. So with that in mind, I think a very, very overarching theme as well for this audience is the fact that, you know, whether it's good or bad, many of us in the cow-calf business, we're not participating in the final valuation of our calves. Regardless of our individual circumstances, of course, this segmented industry often drives us to make a marketing decision very early in the lifespan and in delivery of that final product, of course. So that's oftentimes, now I say good or bad, don't be confused that I think it's always bad, because oftentimes when we merchandise our feeder calf, we're receiving more, especially in the case of my cows, receiving more than what we deserve at times. But what I hear often from ranchers is, I deserve to receive more than what I'm getting. I'm getting less. Just recognize that we operate, depending on the year and depending on our own specific calf crop, we operate both sides of that line, don't we? Not always good, not always bad. You know, Cattle Facts in 2017 did a survey of their ranching membership and determined that I think it was, what, 18% of their members were retaining ownership through the feed yard. And I would recommend or suggest that since it's Cattle Facts data and we think about the average Cattle Facts member, that number's probably high, right, basis the fact that their membership would not represent the average of the American cow-calf producer, but probably a bit more of the progressive or market forward end of the cow-calf segment. So that number's probably a bit high, isn't it? Now, I'm not making judgment, but just stating the fact that most in the cow-calf sector are becoming detached from our calf pretty early, again, in that animal's life. And we're relying on an auction system of some kind, whether it be one of our great auction markets here in the state or in your respective state here in the range cow region or on video, etc. But most of us are becoming disconnected from that animal. Now, I make no judgment, but just state the fact. But I think it's important for us to think about our customer, Grant, not the consumer, but our calf buying customer, and what Gary Darnell and his colleagues in his sector are doing more of today, what they need to do and consider when merchandising what we're selling them or providing to them as an input in that calf. So this data, although hard to see, I think you can understand the trend line. That red line on top is the percentage of formula and forward contract plus grid marketed fed cattle in the feedlot sector over time, going back to 2005 through 2018. And the green line, lower and lower each year, would be the negotiated cash fed cattle trade percentage. So you can see that the way feeders are marketing their cattle to the packer, good or bad, we could argue in an entirely separate session, that marketing method has increasingly become avenues that not always but often include a carcass merit piece to them, particularly in those formula and grid merchandising arrangements. So we just need to recognize, I think, what has become more popular regardless of the reason. Well, take a step back and think about our product and our advantage in the marketplace. We know we have production cost disadvantages in the protein sector, don't we? Not a headline for any of us in this room. But fortunately, we have, first of all, we have the tastiest protein amongst the major protein sectors or products available in this country, don't we? We can beat our competition. I have no fear from a taste standpoint. As well, when we think about trying to capture a bigger piece of the pie, that price-value relationship is what the consumer is looking at. I think we offer a better value relationship. Now, specifically about our beef product, however, if we look at what creates a better eating experience, you can't read these numbers, so I will tell you that on the left axis there would be the percentage of satisfying eating experiences. And then those bars would represent increasing levels of marbling through the USDA quality grade spectrum up from the standard to the prime quality grade. So the choice, the three choice grades are there in the center of that screen. Again, apologize, you can't see the detail. We've got three levels of choice and then two levels of prime marbling. So as we increase marbling and quality grade substantially, then we also increase the percentage of satisfying eating experiences for consumers. And then the next data here, with the smaller numbers than you can actually read, suggests that the carcass cutout value, as we move from select up to commodity choice, and in this case also certified Angus beef, our brand, in that premium choice and prime category up into prime, the cutout values and the associated spreads across the grades and through that CAB brand spectrum increase tremendously. So I'll read the numbers to you briefly, but the carcass cutout value, if you're not familiar, is if we deconstruct the carcass and put it into boxes and then put a value on those subprimal cuts and roll those all back together in what would be the carcass, put it back together with each value intact. That's what the cutout is, right? So the difference in the select cutout is $14.13 compared to choice. That's a discount. The CAB premium, $10.11, and then prime, $18 and change. And these are cumulative. They're additive values. So I think I can impress upon you that it matters from a carcass standpoint to the end user where we are in terms of that spectrum of quality grade marbling and a consequential eating experience. So the carcass values there, and apologize, I have to read the small print as well to keep myself straight, but the prime carcass for this time frame, this year, this is 2019 through November 11th. The prime carcass, $290 on a 9-weight animal. The CAB, $218 premium. And the choice, $127 premium. That's a carcass, what the packer is able to achieve. Let's take one step back and think about the industry and where we've been and how we got to where we are today. You know, we have answered the call for a higher quality grade product across the United States. Since 2006, that's the low point in this data where choice and prime carcasses were 50% of the mix, to 2018, where prime and choice carcasses at the high were 83% of our total fed cattle carcass production. Pretty tremendous change since 2006 to today, isn't it? And there were a couple of things that went on in the late 2000s. First of all, we had the invention, if you will, or application of camera grading technology, which substantially increased the uniformity of our grading across all packing plants. plants, which is a very big benefit. We also had distillers' grains introduced heavily into our feeding sector, which I would say net benefit to quality grade and how we feed cattle. And at the same time, we also had a drought, didn't we, in 2010, 11, 12, and 13, depending on where you were. And since that time, we've replaced a lot of cows that were culled with arguably a higher quality set of replacement females into the U.S. cow herd, genetically improving quality grades. So with that trend, and I'll show you one more time, what we've done is we have increased substantially the amount of particularly choice grading carcasses, haven't we? So you might say to yourself, well, we're kind of flooding that market. You know, that's surely going to be a premium that's going to go away. Well, what's happened over time, however, is indeed arguing against that fact. Lots of messy-looking line movement in this slide, but it shows that although the choice select price spread, which is what this trend line is showing, although it's been erratic, more erratic now than ever, it's also reached higher highs in most recent years. This data going back to the year 2000. So we have improved the supply, and yet we have also seen the demand and price point continue to strengthen. That's a pretty good market signal. Here is the 2000, this red line on top I want you to look at, specifically the 2019 choice select price spread and what's occurred this year. We are, those of us that participate in the feeding end of things and pay attention there, we know there's seasonality to the choice select spread, don't we? Particularly high in April, May, and June when cattle are grading less robustly, and also when grilling season is in hot demand, and then declining into the summertime when grilling demand and the demand for high-quality middle meats declines, and then coming back again in the fall in this season of the year ahead of Christmas and the winter holidays, right? What's happened in 2019? I know we had a Tyson plant fire in August that you might say really messes up a lot of our data trend lines, and what we expected in the market did not occur. And you might say that impacts as well the choice select spread. I agree with you. But this data has gone up and off to the right beginning in July prior to that time. So I just want to recommend or suggest to you the idea that as much as we have more high-quality product available today, the demand remains especially robust. Let's look at the prime category, something that most of us, I think, 10 years ago didn't pay much attention to when 2 and 3% of our production total fell into the prime quality grade. Kind of an anomaly at that point in time to actually see a prime grade come across your carcass summary sheet. Well, since that time, as an industry collectively, the fed cattle supply has increased dramatically, particularly in the last 5 years. We are producing upwards of 8%, and in Nebraska and these northern states that we are representing here today, oftentimes 12 and 14% prime carcasses. Now we're talking about enough of our animals that we can be concerned about this as what can we get paid for those. The top line there is the prime cutout price. Again, apologize, you can't see the small price numbers, but obviously, in 2019, a prime carcass today is worth pursuing. In our company, just to give you a little insight to our brand, 30% of our growth in the prime, actually I want to say it this way, in the last 4 years, our certified Angus beef brand prime production has increased 30%, not production, but sales volume, averaging 30% across the last 4 years. In 2019, you can see at retail, we had a 90% increase in prime sales in the retail sector. I think most of us don't think about a grocery store as an area where we're going to see lots of folks wanting to pay for something like prime quality grade product, but we certainly have seen that. So the reality of our business has changed most recently to where folks across retail and food service are really increasing the product line that they're looking to offer to their clientele to further differentiate their business through the meat case. It's exciting stuff because we're increasing the pie by answering that call with a product that's worth more. So we're going to take it back to the cattle quickly, talk about the value the packer's willing to pay. And if you can see those numbers on the right, those dollar values are in relationship per head to the market average from July through late September 2019. So the market average being kind of the five area weighted average, if you will, or the regional carcass price. And then what we're able to actually put in our pocket from the packer paying us on a grid for each of those quality grades. So you can see Select is actually $143 discount carcass price to the market average. And then Choice, closer to $50. CAB, closer to $100. And Prime, over $200. Okay? Dollar values worth achieving on an individual carcass basis. I'd be remiss not to talk about yield grade. That's the other side of the carcass pricing scenario, isn't it? We've got premiums and discounts associated with that. On the left, you've got yield grade 1, and 2019 numbers would say $5.68 per hundredweight premium for yield grade 1 carcasses. Yield grade 2s, close to $3, and then 3s are par, aren't they? The packer says yield grade 3s are worth no premium or discount. More importantly, perhaps, in our neck of the woods, a yield grade 4 and how we finish cattle today and the heavier carcass weights and the days on feed, maybe more importantly, think about yield grade 4s in terms of a discount close to $10 per hundredweight in 2019. And, of course, yield grade 5s, Gary, are a complete disaster. We want none of those with a $15 and change discount. So recognizing that I'm talking about the upside in quality, we have to manage the full spectrum for merchandising fed cattle, and those premiums and discounts also apply. No need for you to worry about the green and red print on this one. We're not playing the blocks game with Donnell. I'm just showing those of you that are not as familiar with grid marketing what the word grid means, so that you can walk away with a visual as to what's behind grid marketing. With the quality grade spectrum up and down the left side of that axis, from actually no roll or standard product at the bottom up through USDA Prime at the top, and then yield grades 1 through 5 from left to right across that top bar, and then more dollars premium associated with upper left boxes, and more dollars discount associated with bottom right boxes. So there's your grid. Go home with that in mind, if nothing else. We want to put more prime yield grade ones in the box, which of course those really don't exist in nature, so to speak, but we want to get closer to those as much as we can. Moving then on to what we see typically at the packing level, the packers, they're only willing to be adding premiums to our pocketbook if we beat the average of what they see walk through their packing plant door on a weekly basis, aren't they? So although we think about carcasses maybe on a per animal basis, packers pay for fed cattle on a load lot basis. Regarding the percentage of animals in that lot that achieve our different grade and branded and weight specs, don't they? So packers are used to seeing weekly at least 70% choice, but including prime in our region, often 80 or 82%. And then a yield grade 3 is going to be, again, what they call middle of the road, no premium or discount. So that's what they're basing the grid pricing against, is the average of the cattle they see weekly. And can you beat the average? If so, they'll pay us a premium for that set of cattle, won't they? So I just wanted to give you that perspective that, for instance, we talk about the Choice Select spread at $25 and $26 here most recently. We don't get all of that. We get 30% of it because the packer expects 70% choice on a weekly basis. Now, I'm going to try to bring this home rather quickly and talk about how we can calculate that back to the feeder calf. If we so had the opportunity to get paid on a feeder calf basis due to added quality, here's some numbers that I came up with, and I think they're rather representative. If we deliver to the marketplace the actual average, let's say 70%+ choice and a few primes and 35% certified Angus beef, if we're talking about cattle that are eligible for our brand, and kind of the common mix of yield grades, I'd actually suggest that we could get $4.92 value if those cattle were merchandised on a grid and we got the value back to the feeder calf. So my point there being that average cattle in our region could if we differentiate them on grid value, be worth almost $5 a hundredweight more than the market average. We don't ever really want to be at the average number, do we? So if we go to cattle that grade and hang up a little better, potentially $8.50 per hundredweight premium at 5.5 weight, and then the best cattle, now we're talking about maybe 20% prime, 60% certified Angus beef, etc., you know, pretty high quality, better, best end, we could almost be at $15 per hundredweight. Again, not easy to achieve, particularly at auction, is it? But the reality is they may be worth that much more. So to take it home further, well, you can't see these numbers, so this may fall somewhat flat. But as we talk about the yield grade side of things, once again, I'd put the data up here to show you that although, you know, the premiums are high for yield grade ones, the average in 2019 for yield grade one achievement is 5.5% across the United States. So a relatively small category as we look at our ability to hit that. Now, granted, based on differences in breed and management, we may be looking at an entirely different outcome, but the average of U.S. production is 5.5% prime. And then down to yield grade fours, again, I think we're pretty concerned about avoiding those. So we're at a U.S. average 10%. Not nearly as big and ominous as it might seem, but we sure don't need to be above that with an affiliated $9 and change per hundredweight discount for yield grade four. I'd be remiss not to talk about dressing percentage, but frankly, I don't think I have the time to get into that with detail. But I don't want you to walk away and say, well, that Paul Dykstra didn't even address the idea that cattle need to yield and hang up the pounds on the rail to get them ahead of a live weight sale. I do agree. I fully understand. And I would recommend you, if you're thinking about grid marketing and doing the math, let's consider the fact that one percentage point change in dressing percentage may be 15 pounds of carcass weight difference, positive or negative, depending on which side of average we are. So as we think about merchandising cattle and breeding cattle, we need to keep in mind red meat yield and carcass yield is very, very important across this discussion. Finally, not the focus of today's discussion, but I think we should at least pay some attention and give credit to the fact that we have these different programs available to us third party in terms of process verifications. Those under the Angus Link umbrella are just one example. I don't mean to say that this is the only potential avenue to go in the marketplace. There are several others that are competitive and do a very good job. But we talk about never ever three programs: natural, non-hormone treated cattle, and then feeder calf programs like Angus Link that have the option to further identify genetic merit based on the pedigree and the genetic input of those feeder calves. Those are all things that I think are right now items in the market that we may be able to utilize moving forward to further differentiate value in the feeder cattle segment. So with that, I'm going to step aside and listen to my esteemed colleagues here and what their experiences have been. This is my favorite slide of all. You can't read it in the back, so I'll read it to you. I think we should have more of these out in Nebraska Panhandle. This says, "Partner, you are in Cow Country, USA." And if you come across signs like that in Cow Country, it always makes me feel rather good. And I put that in there because I feel that way about so many of you that are out here doing God's work and producing a product that we can be proud of and go merchandise to our advantage. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Paul. Really quickly, we'd like to transition over and welcome Gary to share his perspective from the feed yard segment.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure for me to be here. After this presentation, I feel very humbled. I feel very humbled after that presentation. I'm looking at the production end of it a lot closer here. And
how do you get that?
Okay. Thank you. As a result of added value, and we are always talking about added value, we go from the conception to consumption, and we're trying to add value in all the segments to get to our product to the consumer. And pounds are still king. When we talk about added value, we need to talk about the pounds. So those reward us more as producers than anything else. Yes, there's other items out there that add value, but we got to remember that pounds are king. This chart here is I like, because we're talking about retained ownership, and as a cow-calf producer, we have more opportunities to receive value at different segments or different points in our operation than any other segment in our industry. We can sell that calf right off the cow. We can sell, wean him for 45 days, sell him. We've got all these options. We can background him. We can sell him there. We can go through a winter grazing program, sell him there. We can go through a summer program, sell him there, or we can go through the feedlot. So when we're talking about retained ownership, it doesn't mean that we always retain those cattle all the way through to finish through the feedlot. And so that's a real advantage that we as cow-calf producers have, in my mind. According to Cattle Facts, 60% of our calves sold off the ranch go to a direct market, like a sale barn. 20% of those go to a forward contract type thing, like video sale, maybe a private buyer that you sell early and deliver later. And the other 20% goes through some kind of a background program. Again, according to Cattle Facts, about 22% of the backgrounders are the actually background, and they just background the calves at some point. Winter grazing is 10%. Summer grazing is 8%. 16% is a figure I got, Paul, but heard you mention 18%. But that's about the percent. That's the part that goes through the feedlot. So as a result of backgrounding and retaining ownership or finishing and so forth, I want to go quickly through a break-even. But before we get to break-even, I mentioned 10 points that most people ask when they background calves. This is in the proceedings, and I'm not going to go through those because of the time element here. But a lot of those questions are asked and answered when we go through a break-even. And because of not having a PowerPoint, this break even here is a heifer calf at 600 pounds, and it's going to go through the feedlot. If you look on the top left-hand column, that calf is basically 600 pounds. We put a price on that calf. We estimate what the gain will be on that calf per head per day, then we estimate the cost of the production or the cost of per pound to put on that. Here, in this case, it's 80 cents. We estimate the death loss. We estimate what the interest costs will be, and that's on the cattle and on the feed. And we estimate the vet cost and the processing costs throughout that period of time. So the real line that we're looking at is right in the middle of that, and that's our break even. We've budgeted, and we're fairly close to those budgets because of history and past history, and all the feedlots have this. So, but the break even is that's what we're looking for. That's what we got to have for that animal when we've reached our destination. Now, we can make this break even for a 750 pounder or a 600 pounder. This just happens to be for the finished animal. In the bottom right-hand corner, you can see that we look down to the month that this animal is going to be marketed, and it happens to be June 11th. We look at the futures market on June 11th. At that time, we made this break-even. It was $1.18. So as a result, it shows us that we can make $80 a head a profit on this calf. On the lower left-hand corner is a lot of numbers down there, and what that is what we calculate, that how many dollars am I going to have in my retained ownership on these animals. And we figured 100 head here, and as a result, the total figure down here is $141,000. It's a lot of money. So when you go to a feedlot and are looking to finish your animals or retain ownership or at some point, you got to have a lot of faith in that person, because you're investing a lot of dollars for him to manage, and you got to have confidence that he's going to do the best job you can. The total dollars figure here, a lot of our customers take this to their lender and they say, hey, this is what it looks like. This is how many dollars we're going to have invested, and talk over the financing part of that program. One of the advantages of retained ownership is, again, added value. And it's not unusual to add value. And if you got good genetics in your cattle, and I'm sure you're just like I am, I got the best genetics in my herd that there is. You do too. But we really find out that way when we retain ownership. And it's not unusual to make $100 a head above the cash market. I don't know how much of this you can see, but I will try and explain that to you. On the top line here, the highlighted part, this rancher, he's a commercial rancher that feeds with us. This rancher got $133 above the market price, the cash market. The same week that these cattle were processed, the cash market was $1.06. He got $1.16, or $133 cash more for that animal, or $10 a hundredweight in alive. Those cattle, clear to the left, show that they were 98% choice. They were they yielded 63.45. The base yield on this grid was 63.60, so he got deducted on that. These cattle here, were being 98% choice, they had 5% fours, and so that was taken off. Had one select, that cost him $24.39. That was a deduct. So when we go on the grid, we get the pluses and we get the minuses. And if you got the genetics, and most of you will have in this part of the country, I'm sure, but you are very fortunate to have those genetics. And if you retain ownership, you have the opportunity to gain more than the market price, as Paul already indicated. I'm going to hurry through this. When we retain ownership, we need to think about the advantages and disadvantages. And some of the advantages are that, hey, you got more pounds on that animal that you got to sell. And so as a result, you've added value. The other added value things are the CAB program, the parts you get there, the premiums on prime. Of course, you get the deducts, but that's an advantage. Another advantage you'd have is you get a report card on your herd and your genetics on performance and carcass quality. And that can be very valuable to you in the fact that you can take that report card back home and use it in your management program to help increase whatever items that you want to do to add more value to your product. Some of the disadvantages are, number one is risk. You own that cattle, that animal longer. And so you're at the mercy of the market. Does the market go up, goes down? We don't know when we put that animal in the feedlot. But you have to manage that risk. And so you need to look at some risk management, if possible, during that retained ownership. Another disadvantage, or maybe advantage, is that if you retain ownership and you're used to selling your calves this year, and you retain ownership, you may sell those cattle next year. So that income can have an influence on your bottom line of your operation. Those are some of the advantages and disadvantages. Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, thank you again, Gary. And I'd like to welcome up our final panelist, who is Britton, to talk from the cow-calf perspective.
Well, if you've paid attention at all, it's not very hard to see how I got roped into giving a talk today. But I'm real excited to be here. I absolutely love cattle feeding, and it's kind of my only hobby and something I'm very passionate about. And something I've thought a lot about is retaining ownership, and I also learned that cattle feeding is kind of my side hustle, as the city people call it. But I kind of grew up, and my dad and uncle had already made the decision to retain ownership, and it's something that I was kind of always involved in. And you go to meetings like this, and everybody says, retain ownership, and everything you read says retain ownership. And it got me thinking, why don't more people retain ownership? And I kind of came up with a short list of why I think they don't. And it's really hard. I mean, it's risky. It's a lot of risk. You don't know much about it, maybe. You don't know who to talk to about it. You don't know how to get to that point. And also, maybe you're not in a financial position to do it. Or you're perceived that you're not in a financial position to do it. You know, you've made it to October, and now you're going to hang on to these cattle, and you're going to put more into them and take longer to get it back. And I'm going to talk about how I think there's ways around that. And a banker can be pretty hesitant about it, especially if you want to send cattle out of the state. They don't have as much control then. They don't really want to do it for you, you know. And I've learned that a lot of people have tried it. A lot of my neighbors, a lot of people that I'm around have tried it once. A long time ago they tried it, and it didn't work for them, you know. Maybe something happened, and maybe the dollars they got back, they didn't feel that it was worth their time to do it. So, I don't know. I kind of came up with solutions that, you know, the livestock business is a people business. And if you're worried about you don't know much about it and don't know how to do it, there's a lot of people to talk to. Everybody in this business shares their secrets, right? Everybody wants to talk to you. Most feed yard managers are personable people. You can go out and meet these. You're at a meeting right now. You've seen a feed yard manager up here. I bet if you went and introduced yourself to Gary Darnell, he would love to talk to you about feeding cattle. It's not that hard to meet the people and start calling people. The financial position, you know, I don't know if a lot of people realize it, but there's a lot of feed yards that will finance the cattle and finance the feed. And it becomes easy to, you know, you can send those cattle to somewhere like Kansas, and they'll keep about 25% and send you the money back. So what you're doing is you're getting money back coming in October when you ship the cattle, and also, you know, if it works, you'll get money coming back in June. So it actually makes your cash flow better and can actually increase your financial position. And then, you know, my solution to, then it becomes like, should I retain ownership? How do I go about it? And you have to look at marketing as kind of a moving target. You don't maybe necessarily need to retain ownership every year, right? I live in western South Dakota. Selling at the sale barn is not necessarily the wrong thing to do. We have one of the highest calf markets in the United States, and you're not wrong to go there. They pay you a premium for those calves. But I think the decision to retain ownership is really simple. You can run a simple break-even. If you don't know what a break-even is, you can find out. There's a lot of sheets on the internet. There's a Cattle Crush app you can use. You can call the feedlot, and they'll run a break-even for you. and you have to kind of know what calves are bringing and what they're worth. You know, and I think in a high market, you need to be selling those calves, right? In 2014, we had this record profits, record prices. That is not the time to be trying to retain ownership, right? You just sell those suckers and move on with life and take your money. But in a low market, I think, is when retaining ownership becomes the most important, or it's the time to try it. It's the hardest time to try it because that's when things are dire, right? And it's not easy to make that decision, but when a market's low, that's the time that you need to capture every single nickel out of the pie, if you will, and try to make as much money as you can. And it also allows you to buy yourself some time. You know, like this year, man, things were looking pretty tough in August and even in October, and this market's kind of hard, but there's some things coming down the line that, well, maybe we got some hope, and this will just allow you to buy yourself some time. Maybe you could background them and the market goes up and you could sell them or retain ownership all the way through. I don't know. You know, and I think a pretty good example is last year. I was running break-evens, and, man, everything was $100 to $150 loser, just going off the average price at the sale barn. And it's like, well, why would you want to buy calves to retain ownership? It break-evens at $128, I don't think the market's going to get there. The price wasn't what you wanted. It, you know, people in cow country didn't think it was good, but it kind of was, and it didn't pay to retain those calves. But you get into a year like this where you can kind of run a break even and they kind of work and you can maybe lock in some profit. That's the time to try it and kind of give yourself some time for that market to go up. Finally, you know, if you have some known genetics and kind of know that you're going to have above average performance and average quality, it becomes easier to retain ownership. Paul talked a lot about grids. I wanted to share a couple with you. I guess you can't see it, but you know, the kicker of this, so we'll breed all our heifers and preg check in August. Then we'll send all those heifers to the feedlot as kind of yearlings. And in 2017, they went 72% prime and brought back a really good premium. And the latest thing we had was, you know, had a set of calves. They'd have been the bottom end of our bulls that we cut and kind of grew along and then put them on feed in Kansas and kill them through U.S. premium beef. And they plus the grid $270. So to put that in perspective, the average cattle that we're selling were, or fat cattle price was $1.98 to $1. And we sold those for $1.17. So I think it comes back to when you have closeouts and grids like that, and you have cattle that'll do that, and cattle that'll feed and gain, there is no commodity market, no sale barn in the area that somebody is going to pay you enough or pay you for what the true value of those cattle are. When you have known genetics and when you get to that point, it doesn't matter if you top the sale or whatever. They're never going to pay you for that total worth of those cattle. But I don't know. That's about all I got.